Gordy Chiesa is our NBA guru, friend of the program. Gordy, how are you, sir?
I am doing great, guys. Thank you.
How much, now that we've seen Golden State sweep their way into the finals, 12-0 in the Western Conference playoffs, how much do you think Kawhi Leonard's presence in that series would have changed things? Could the Spurs have gotten two wins, one win?
Yes, his injury affected the Spurs. They would have got one win. They probably would have lost in the series 4-1. They're a dominant team, the Warriors. And without Kawhi Leonard, who's a two-way player, the Spurs really are undermanned tremendously. But it's more about the Warriors. The Warriors, they play well both offense and defense. They've won a road playoff game for 14 consecutive series, so which means that they have the ability for the last 3 years to win at least one road game in those series. And that happened this year multiple times. So right now they're 12-0. They're the most dominant team entering the NBA Finals in NBA history. Their average point differential is 16.3, which is the most ever for the NBA Finals, with only the Lakers. The Lakers back in 2001, they were 15.5. So they're dominant. But with that said, the most dominant player in the NBA is on the other side right now. His name is LeBron James, and he has enough ability and talent to take over a game by himself.
Okay, so that was going to be my next question, Gordy, was, you know, I'm going to fast forward things here, assuming that Cleveland Cavaliers kind of rebound from their hiccup and go on to play the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals. Does LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers have a chance? It sounds as though you're leaning on the side of, yes, of course they do.
Yes, they do, because LeBron's better than anybody they have on the Warriors, and that's saying a whole bunch because the Warriors have an elite team with four All-Stars, and their secondary players are really all good. Andre Iguodala is a very solid player. So is Sean Livingston, young guy Ian McCaw, Ian Clark. Those guys are a David West veteran. They're loaded. But LeBron's the best player in the world, and so he's at a high motor. And it's so interesting, Sunday night's game against the Celtics, LeBron just didn't have it. It happens to the greatest players. We just don't have it, and the Celts played an incredible, unbelievable, inspirational game to win at the last second when the Leprechauns were on their side as far as Avery Bradley making that four-bounce jumper that finally danced back into the rim. So with that said, it should be a great series. I'm looking forward to it. It's the third straight year of the two exact same teams, but it's different dynamics. With Kevin Durant there, it changes the look of the Warriors. And now also with LeBron at the top of his game and adding some bench play and Darren Williams, former Jazz man, we'll see how it all plays out. I'm going to lean towards the Cavs.
Gordy, I'm glad you brought up Darren Williams because there was a weird little vignette, little video, little gif that was going around where LeBron James went to go back to the bench in Game 3 and Darren Williams was sitting in the seat he wanted to sit in. So LeBron motioned to him or said something to him, and Darren got out of his seat. And that's obviously the best player in the game right now, asking a guy who was a one-time All-Star to move, and Darren did so without any problem. And the team probably didn't think anything of it, but from just an outsider perspective, it's like, wow, that's kind of a crazy power move. You're like, hey, I know there's a seat two chairs away, but I want that one. Get out of the way. Is that just the way it works? Is there just like a pecking order and a hierarchy sometimes when a guy like LeBron James is going to the bench?
Yes, there is. There's a hierarchy both internally and externally. And he has enough juice to do that to all his teammates. And let's hopefully, though, he doesn't abuse it. So let's hopefully that the next time or in the locker room or in the team bus that he lets players be themselves also. But it's all part of the game, and you want LeBron to be head on straight during a game to get himself ready to play, and 95% of the time he does, and Darren Williams is a valuable part of that team. I know he's playing erratic minutes, but it's just one injury away, so suddenly he's in the game. With the Cavs right now, another former Jazz man, OC and Tom, Kyle Korver has to get himself going. What happens in playoff basketball, the scouting is so intense that the defender on Kyle Korver is never leaving him. So when the ball comes to eventually on broken plays, Kyle Korver is recklessly shooting off one leg, and he's shooting very low percentage. So he has to slow down his motion when the ball comes to him against good defense. So two Jazz men will play against the Warriors in the next round.
Gordy Chase is our guest here on ESPN 700, talking what we believe will be the inevitable finals matchup between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. LeBron and company, they got their playoff loss kind of off their back. I don't think they're going to lose again to the Boston Celtics. Golden State is going to go rest. They are undefeated through the 2017 playoff series right now. Is that a negative in any scenario for Golden State? Like that, you know, it creates extra pressure to try and make it through the finals even undefeated, that maybe you haven't been truly tested heading into the finals. Is it ever a bad scenario to be 12-0 in the playoffs?
Yes, it is a bad scenario. You want to be tested. Yeah, you want to fight, bite, claw where you've got to reach back. And they did, though. They were tested in game one. When the Spurs, with Kawhi Leonard, before he got hurt in the third quarter, the Warriors are down 21, and then they caught him at the end. So that's when they were tested. But you need more. At the top of the apex of NBA playoff finals basketball, the intensity is going to kick up another three notches. And the ability to be physical, but understand if you get two quick fouls, it affects your play mentally and your team play, but you've got to be aggressive. So it's that incredible fine line. So you'd rather be tested than what? In biting, fighting, clawing, knowing that it's so fragile. Now, that was good for the Cavaliers. They were tested with the Celtics on Sunday night. The Celts gave it their all. They refused to die, and they won. And in the big picture, that's good for Cleveland.
I want to take this conversation elsewhere for the time being, Gordy, and ask you about the state of the NBA, so to say. There's been a lot of talk as to whether or not, you know, these, I don't want to call them super teams, but the people out there are calling them super teams. You know, whether or not this is good for the NBA, so to speak, and in particular, if you don't mind harping on the luxury tax, so to say, do you think the luxury tax is ever going to leave, / do you think it should leave?
No, it's never going to leave, because what it does, I'm going to simplify as far as the narrative, is that it's a vehicle for the NBA, for the owners to police each other. So it's not totally reckless spending. And I'm simplifying it, if you're a repeat offender, it goes up as far as being a repeated taxpayer. And that extra money that you're paying for your player's payroll, that goes to the other owners, divided equally, of being under the luxury tax. So you're over the salary cap, but under the luxury tax. So it's more of a policing policy. I'm glad they have it. I'm more for the players getting paid a fair market value, but the owners are the only people in professional sports that have the risk. They risk owning the team, and that's a risk they're willing to take. And like any business, Tom, you want to have cost certainty. In any business, you know, you have, especially in the business of sports, when it's a cost certainty, you know what you're going to spend 95% of the time, and then you pay salaries accordingly based on certainty.
We're looking at a trilogy matchup, most likely, between the Cavs and the Warriors, as you've already mentioned. It looks like the Warriors made a move in the offseason specifically to beat this LeBron James team with the addition of Kevin Durant. I don't know, every team in the league wanted Kevin Durant, but the Warriors adding him felt like something specifically to beat this LeBron James Cavs team. Are we getting to a point now where Boston has to do things specifically to beat LeBron? Yeah, you just want to improve in general, but you've got to make a personnel addition that makes you more formidable against LeBron. And is it the same way in the West with the Cavs, that like the Spurs, if they're going to make personnel moves, and the Jazz, if they're going to make personnel moves, have to do so with those teams in mind?
The answer is yes, is that you've got to, it's who you play against. So the first thing for most teams is first get to the playoffs and then you get to the playoffs, win the first round, and the next layer of a franchise is be consistently winning the first round and getting to the second round. And once you do that for X amount of years, then you add the last layers, meaning plural, of who you play against as far as trying to match it up. But you just can't do it all at once because the economics of it doesn't make you have it. It allow you to do that. And the last point is that there's also element of lady luck. In any sport, OC, you know, a lot of times guys a sixth-round draft pick in the NFL, the guy becomes what? An elite player. So there's an element of luck where you drafted somebody in the second round, and because of his skill set and his rapid player development. That would be the Jazz right now, Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert is one of the top 15 players in the NBA. The Jazz paid $3 million, which was absolutely brilliant, to the Denver Nuggets to draft him at number 27, and the rest is history. So now the Jazz have a player that can match up against other elite front court players and be a shot blocker and score. So from the Jazz point of view and their team building, it's not only Kevin Durant trying to play against. It's just keep adding good players and fast-tracking player development.
Last night, Greg Popovich started Manu Ginobili in front of the home fans. It was only his 10th start in like the last 7 years. That's not the role that he played for the Spurs. Pop, after the game, praised Manu for his selflessness and the way that he's handled his time with the organization. And it sounded like, and it seemed like, the way fans and Manu and even some of the opposing players for Golden State were handling the situation, that Manu Ginobili's career with San Antonio is likely coming to a close. Is he a Hall of Famer?
Yes, he is. Hall of Famer, yes, absolutely, very much. He's a two-time All-Star. He would 2008. He was voted Sixth Man of the Year. He's played in 213 playoff games. Four-time champion. So overall, he's played in 992 games in his career, and he's been an incredible Sixth Man. But even better than that, he's a two-way player and an incredible clutch performer in playoff basketball. So he gave it. And add to that is that he won a gold medal for Argentina during their unbelievable run in the early 2000s. They had this dream team of Argentina with Luis Scola and those guys and Manu Ginobili, and they won the gold in 2004. So the answer is yes, he's definitely a Hall of Famer on the first ballot, and it adds also to Tony Parker being a Hall of Fame, and so will Tim Duncan. So it's special. Those three guys have won the most ever playoff games as a trio in NBA history.
Wow. Do you have a list history for us today, Gordy?
Yes. This list today, I was thinking about OC, Tom, and how OC loves to steal things, both legally and illegally.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct, right? So, Tom, thievery is legal in some parts of society. So in football, interception of stealing the ball.
Totally legal.
That's right. Hockey, stealing the puck.
Sure.
Baseball, stealing a base.
Yeah.
And an OC's former pass, stealing someone's girlfriend's.
Yes.
emphasis on former life. Thanks for taking right, emphasis
so,
on that.
No, former. OC. Yeah. OC, can we talk, you and I, can we talk?
Yeah.
So with that said, this is a baker's dozen of the NBA all-time playoff career steal leaders.
Okay.
And Mono's in that group, so I'm honoring Mono right now. So this is part of the segue to it. All right, number 13. With 276 steals in the playoffs career, Robert Horry. They used to call him Big Shot or Robert.
Yeah.
Number 12, Clyde Drexler at 278. At 285, number 11, Manu Ginobili. So he's the 11th most ever thievery in NBA playoff history. Number 10, incredible player with 287 steals, the doctor, always making house calls, Julius Erving. Number 9 at 295, one of the most underrated players in the last 25 years. He played to win. He had an unbelievable cerebral game and defensive-minded and also open jump shot when he could score, was Mo Cheeks. He's ninth all-time in steals. It's absolutely impressive. Number 8, we all love him as far as being an incredible shooter, but he's the eighth all-time in steals with 296, Larry Bird. Number seven, this guy was another elite point guard. He's now coaching and head coach in the NBA with the Milwaukee Bucks. I coach him with the Nets with 302 steals, Jason Kidd. Number six, just retired last year, incredible offensive performer, but he also stole the ball in that passing lane with 310 steals. Number six, Kobe Bryant. Number five, we all love this guy locally. I had the privilege of coaching him for 16 years. He has 338 steals in his NBA playoff career, John Stockton. Number four, he did it with a smile. He now runs the L.A. Lakers with 358, Magic Johnson. Number three, I saw this guy up close and personal, Tom, if you get my drift, stealing the ball versus the Jazz in many a playoff game with 376. You can make a discussion point, Tom. He's the greatest player of all time, Michael Jordan. All right, number two, this guy is still playing. He's playing tonight, as a matter of fact, and he could be number one during this 2017 playoffs with 378 all-time steals, LeBron James. And number one, OC, I saw this guy also steal a ball against the Jazz many a time in a playoff game where he overplayed the passing lane, and he was absolutely long and agile with what I call early eyes. Early eyes in any sport is when you break to the ball with early eyes and your hands extended in the passing lane, and your hand meets the ball instead of the ball meeting your hand. I'm saying it backwards purposely because you're extended out in the passing lane. Mm-hmm. With 395, Scottie Pippen is the all-time leading thievery in playoff history.
Scottie and Michael and LeBron all in the top five. I mean, goodness gracious.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. And OC, it's more about two-way players. I mean, all these guys could score the ball, and you have to score to win. There's no doubt about that. But in playoff basketball, so much is, you've got to, in the fourth quarter, you have to guard your position because you're playing against someone else. So in other words, so Kevin Durant, he's got to man up defensively and try to slow down LeBron some of the time in that series.
Gordy, speaking of two-way players, do you have any advice for OC?
Oh, absolutely. With OC, my advice is to hang loose. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, go laser on the hula dancing this weekend.
I'll do it. I'll do it, Gordy.
And that's an honor of you coming. Welcome back from Hawaii. Tom and I were trying to fill your shoes, but it's impossible.
Well,
it's impossible.
Yeah, they're big, smelly shoes, but I appreciate you at least trying, Gordy.
So go easy on the hula dancing this weekend. Easy.
All right, I'll try. Thanks for taking the time, sir. Good talking to you.
Thanks, guys. Good luck.